Welcome to another episode of the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. Today, we are discussing tips to defending the pick and roll. We are joined by Princeton Women's Basketball Head Coach Carla Berube, as well as Sacramento Kings Assistant Coach Rex Kalamy.
Welcome to the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. Here are your hosts, Dallin Cuff and Monica McNutt.
What's up, folks? Welcome to another episode of Junior NBA Coaches Corner alongside the great Monica McNutt. I'm Dallin Cuff. Today, we're discussing tips defending the pick and roll. Last episode, we talked about how to teach the pick and roll. So, Mon, were you a good pick and roll defender, whether in the team concept or just if you were on the ball, if you were on the rock?
So one moment stands out post my career playing pickup at grad school with a bunch of dudes. And I remember a guy being like, you were really good in the pick and roll. And I'm like, I kind of did this for real. Like, you're playing around, but I did this for real. So yeah, I'm in the pick and roll.
You should have, you poo-pooed on a little more. Like, dude, you're also not very good at the game, and period. I'm crushing you out here. But that's, you know, neither here nor there. You're a very nice person. We've got two great guests to just talk about defending the pick and roll. Our first guest took over at head coaching at Princeton after 17 years at Tufts University during her first season in 2020, which was the stopped campaign. She led the Tigers to a 26-1 overall record and finished the year 22-game winning streak, was named the Ivy League Coach of the Year. She also brought home gold as head coach of the U16 and U17 USA basketball teams. As a player, she was part of two Final Fours with UConn, including the 95 title team, the Huskies' perfect 35-0 season. Welcome in Princeton head coach Carla Berube. Thank you, Carla, for joining us. Also joining us is one of the finest assistants in the NBA. He's coached with the Clippers, Raptors, OKC, Denver, Minnesota, Philly, and before the NBA, and before getting to the NBA, began his coaching career at college in East LA. Rex Kalamian, thank you so much, Rex and Carla, for joining us.
Happy to be here.
Thank you. Thank you for having us on.
So I'm kind of going to start this similar to how we started the last podcast, because pick and roll has become so much more prevalent in basketball last 10 or 15 years, to where it's almost on every possession. You're running it or you're defending it. So we're talking about defending it. So Carla, with that said, how much more time do you guys spend defending pick and roll situations in terms of breakdown drills? And also when you're 5-on-5 schemes, when you're going through scouting reports, how much more has that become relevant in the last 10 or 15 years based on what you guys are doing on the defensive side of the ball?
Yeah, quite a bit. We pride ourselves on the defensive end. So we're spending quite a bit of time on that side of the ball, whether we are in watching film on how we want to defend it, watching the, you know, our upcoming opponent, what they like to do in the pick and roll. And yeah, we call it screening school, and we spend, quite a bit, you know, we're Princeton, so, you know, school is important to us. So we spend quite a bit of time on it, different schemes, different ways we want to defend it, depending on who's in it, for us, who's in the pick and roll, offensively, who's in it. So I think that's changed over the last, like you said, 10, 15 years. It's such a huge part of women's basketball for sure now. Yeah.
Rex, kind of the same question to you in the NBA level. Obviously, the NBA sets the trend. And you go back 15, 20 years as far as they started setting this trend that now is cascaded through hoops. So as you've gone through your coaching career, how important is it for you to identify players that can play out of the pick and roll, but more importantly, that can defend and understand team concepts to defend, to play in the league?
Well, absolutely. It's a huge part of the NBA game. Obviously, you could get up to or beyond 50 pick and rolls in an NBA game. And it's really important that you have defensive players that understand how to guard the pick and roll, how physical you have to be in playing pick and roll. And then just as important is who is in the pick and roll offensively. So your team may have a base of how you play pick and roll every single night, but some nights that base doesn't fit what the offense may do in pick and roll. So, and we see that now in the NBA playoffs with guys like Damian Lillard and you know, during the regular season with Steph Curry and different guys, Trae Young, they all pose different problems. Sometimes it's the ball handler. Sometimes it's the guy setting the screen that's getting out of it and putting a lot of pressure on your defense, on your backside defense. So it's a big, big part of NBA basketball and something that we really walk through and teach daily.
I kind of feel bad for you guys because I had did a coach steal this from Kobe at one point? I don't know. Defense can be spectacular, but the offensive player is always at the advantage because defense has to react. And so it can be great D, but it's better O. And we've seen so many guys and women, Coach Berube, that have perfected this thing. But let's get to it. Step one, if we got to break this thing down, pick and roll. I mean, it seems like it's equal parts how your guard plays, how your big plays it. I mean, where do you even start, Coach Berube?
Communication. It's the absolute foundation, right? You have to be communicating as soon as you come over half court defensively, when the pick and roll is about to happen, right? It's all about the post player calling it out clearly and early and, you know, with direction. And, you know, the guard who's guarding the ball handler, she's got to have her head on a swivel and see what's happening. She can't just get slammed by that screen either and feeling for it. And then, yeah, it's, you know, it's not allowing them to refuse the ball screen. If it's coming, they've got to use that screen. And there's a lot of different ways to defend it. We go over all of those ways, and everyone on our team has to know how to defend those different schemes. It's on the post player, the defender of the screener, to call it how they're gonna play it. As early as you can do it, whether you're gonna use, you know, different terminology with like colors or numbers, or actually yelling out, high hedge, or you're yelling out mm-hmm. ice, or whatever it is. It's got to be early, and that's, you know, it's all about communication. That's the foundation of our sort of our program, but absolutely on the defensive end.
Rex, before we look at it at the NBA level, Coach Ruby, is there a way that you would like to play it ideally, or is it purely based on what that guard and post strength is?
I mean, I like to be aggressive. So, but I mean, it does depend on that ball handler. It depends on that post player, and it depends on who is in that action for us defensively. You know, when I'm recruiting, I'm looking at players that can defend a lot of different positions. You know, mm-hmm. I like a five player that can actually guard a good ball handler, like with some athleticism and some, they can laterally move their feet well. I like a high hedge. I like a switch and attack. Whatever it is, they've got to be aggressive with it. Stop that ball handler. We like to put our hands up nice and high right away so they can't get off a good shot coming off that ball screen. So whatever it is that we're doing, it's not passive. Typically, it's pretty aggressive and, we get after it no matter what we're doing.
Getting after it seems to be a little bit more risky at the NBA level, Coach Kalamian, just because guys are so well-versed in the reads and the options coming off of it.
Right, and they know how to draw fouls. Like, if you watch an NBA game any night of the week, you're gonna see so many different offensive players that are so smart at drawing fouls and pick and roll. If you try to get into the ball, impact the basketball, and get over the top, there are some guys now that just stop on a dime, and you run into them, and it's an automatic foul. If you get underneath or you put your hand out, they rip through and they draw fouls. So you have to really be very smart about how you play pick and roll. And then some of these players, you have to mix the coverages up. So you may start with what we would say a drop where your big is back. But as soon as the guard comes off and hits two deep threes, you may have to get up into a high wall to where you're showing more bodies and earlier help, and your big is up higher. But a lot of it depends on how mobile your five man is. If they are running mid pick and roll with a five and your five doesn't have quick feet, a lot of teams tend to put their five back in the paint. And if you're a shot blocking five, you could wait at the rim. And there are a lot of teams that do that, and they're very successful. If you have a better, more mobile five, you could bring them up a little bit higher. They can move their feet. They can move laterally. And then they can also backpedal and try to keep the roller in front of them, which is really important in the NBA game. So, it just depends what your defensive strengths are, based on your personnel.
Rex, Carla obviously mentioned communication. To know the screen is coming, to communicate how we're going to play it is really critical. but also you have to read who the ball handler is and who's the 4 or 5 man setting the screen, like where their skills are. How much do you guys drill? How important is the mental piece of it and understanding all that's going into just the action itself?
It's huge, right? You have to have a high IQ. You have to know who's in it, how we're going to play it, what are their strengths, defensively, who are you with too? Like, what are their strengths? I think, the mental piece of basketball is just as important as the physical piece, and to sort of like know what's happening before it happens, or, you know, what you want to do. And we spend a lot of time on scout. I know the NBA does that too. Like, it's a huge part of their practices, or all of their practices, but for ours too, we spend quite a bit of time going over those looks that they're going to get and how we're going to do it, how we're going to defend it. So when you get to game time, it's not a question. We know exactly how we're going to do it. And if it's not working, we quickly change that in timeouts, or, you know, my point guard comes over like, coach, it's not working. Let's do something out. Yeah. So you got to be ready to change it up and to mix it up as well. You know, you don't want to be, you know, just an open book and know exactly how, you know, the opposition shouldn't know how you're going to play it either. So you gotta really change things up.
And there was Rex, just for, there was a play the other day I saw, like Dame came off pick and roll and finally missed a shot, and I think it was game 4 of their series, and Austin Rivers literally said, it was things like, thank God. And he had they slowed down the thing, you could see his mouth, like he's putting it, like at that point they had no option. So how do you coach that piece when you guys think you're doing everything you're telling the guys to do, but it just doesn't matter anymore? Like, what do you say as a coaching staff to keep your guys going at it? Because sometimes, like Monica was saying earlier, it just doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, that's true. And I think on that particular clip, he may have gotten stuck. Austin Rivers got stuck on the screen, or maybe tried to roll underneath it, which you never want to do against an elite shooter like Dame Lillard. But that's why you really have to have a package of different coverages that you can throw out, because your team and your players may be playing their best defense, but they cannot stop this particular player or that particular play. And it happens. And you need different types of defenses. And a lot of times, you know, us personally, if a guy gets going and hits a couple shots, we may, coming out of a timeout, throw on a trap. So we're going to say we're going to trap or blitz the next pick and roll that a guy like Dame Lillard is in. And we're just going to try to tie him up, surprise him, get the ball out of his hands. If it's successful, we'll come right back to it. If they pick it apart, then we'll get back into our normal coverage, but just try to, you know, throw out some different things that maybe they haven't seen that particular game. Sometimes just the offense is just a little bit better than the defense. And then you also have to take into account where they're shooting the basketball from. Like, that may be, Curry and Lillard, they have that type of range, but it is still a difficult shot. And if you're defending it, you've got a hand up and you're doing everything you need to do. Sometimes it's just a little tweak, maybe sending them a different direction. And that's where the scouting part and the analytics come. And we rely on it so heavily. We have 4 games a week, so we're jumping from game to game, and really knowing your personnel and knowing which way you want to send a particular player is huge. Were we sending, Damon Lillard left? Are we sending him right? And we're seeing that right now with Luka Doncic. Like, some nights it doesn't matter. You send him left or right, he's equally as good going both ways. So you just have to be tied in, 5 people together, tied into what you're doing. And it's kind of like Coach Ruby said, it's all about your communication and your team effort doing the same thing every single time. So you, all 5 people know what they're doing.
So on that, Coach Kalamian, the trap in particular, because I know that's one thing that I thought maybe the Knicks would have tried versus Trey, but not so much. But that obviously that becomes far more important to the other 3 on that back line in terms of support. So I guess situations vary, but then the communication, I would imagine, becomes that much more intense, because you got guys that have to rotate or you're immediately giving up an open shot.
No question. Like, all 5 people have to be on high alert and everybody has to be moving at the same time. As you trap the basketball, 2 people are on the ball. That means it's a 4-on-3 on the backside, and you have a big man that's rolling. So you're taking away something, but you're also giving something up, and you're banking on them throwing the basketball to the 5 man. And hopefully he doesn't have the type of skill that, you know, some five men don't have that could maybe make a pass out or finish a layup. So it really opens up a lot of different things defensively that puts you at risk. But the biggest thing is that you're getting the ball out of the primary scorer's hand. Now the back three people have to shrink the court. They have to play with length and they have to be physical on their, you know, on their whatever bumps or closeouts to the basketball. So it opens up more things, but it is a good defense if you want to take the basketball out of a primary scorer's hands.
Coach Berube, and I guess for both of you guys, what defines if you defended a pick and roll successfully, right? Like sometimes people have this question about does a successful play being run mean that you scored? And, you know, differing opinions. What for you is an indicator that your team has defended a pick and roll successfully? Does it stop the shot? Was it a difficult shot? Like what satisfies, okay, we're playing this well for you?
Turnover, a contested shot, getting it all out of the hands of someone that's feeling really good, out of the, you know, their best player, their primary scorer, making someone else, you know, take a shot that you feel is not as a high percentage as others. And, you know, and then getting that defensive board. I mean, that's a good possession, in the pick and roll, for us. Yeah, shot clock violation too, that you've made them really move that ball around and just they couldn't get a good shot. I think doesn't happen as much in the NBA, but we love when that happens. But yeah, I think those things, I mean, you got to pick your poison. You got to, you know, especially if you're blitzing and you're trapping, you're giving up something, but hopefully it's, you know, the least common denominator and it's someone that you don't mind getting maybe a contested, you know, mid-range jumper or contested three that they're not comfortable taking.
So tough two's not getting it for you. They still scoring, I think.
let's take a little bit of a step back just in terms of when we had Alvin Gentry on, Coach Gentry, I was talking about in terms of how to teach the pick and roll. First thing was the angle of the screen from the big guy and really breaking it down and how to you know teach it in small-sided groups and then build out. Rex, when you guys are kind of installing your stuff early on in the season, how do you approach, now these are pros, it is different, but how are you approaching how you guys want to defend the pick and roll in terms of actually the bodies on the floor as you're incorporating getting to five on five? Like how do you build out your defensive scheme?
Well, the first main point is the communication, early, loud, clear, continuous. We have to have communication and direction has to be set as the hopefully before the pick and roll takes place, we know which way we're sending the ball. But as the screen is coming up, it has to be early, loud, clear, continuous from our five man. Second thing is the guard has to impact the basketball. You have to hit the ball as a defender before the screen hits you. If you could hit the ball, then you could get over the screen most times or you could get an offensive foul on that screener as he's moving, trying to screen you. Third thing is our weak side defense has to be in a tight shell. We always talk about touching the paint. So we want feet in the paint as much as possible. And we want to play with length and show our bodies. So it's not just a two-man defense in pick and roll. Although we have the primary defender on the ball and we have the big playing the ball and the roller, we have to have the other three guys in and supporting as much as possible. So that's kind of how we build it, the concept of how we build it. Once the ball is over the screen, we try to get back in front and square it. And our big has to stay in line with the basketball. And then on a pass out, has to go ahead and relocate, explode, move over, and make a second effort in his pick and roll defense. But every pick and roll is different. There are different different people in it. There's different personalities. There's different actions. And you have to be ready for a lot of them. And a lot of times it's not your primary coverage, but it's your secondary coverage. There's guys now have gotten really smart. They snake the pick and roll. So they come off of it and they don't necessarily go downhill anymore. They cut back. If they go left or you're forcing them left, they'll take the ball left. But then all of a sudden they're cutting back to their right and the big guy is rolling on the outside. Now this is another problem and it's another coverage and it involves different people now. Now your strong side is now your weak side. So you have to really prepare for all those different aspects of the pick and roll. And it's difficult. And like Coach Ruby said earlier, these things happen quickly and you have to have an IQ on the floor as to what we're doing. If I get stuck as the guard on the pick and roll and the screen is set, now what are we doing? I can't chase the basketball anymore because I'm behind it and I'll never get back in front of it. So now we have a different coverage, which we call late. And when we are late on a coverage, it turns into something else. And these are all different coverages that you have to work daily on so that everybody understands different positions.
Carlos, on the same point, do you guys start in breakdowns 2-on-2, 3v3 before you build out, or do you build out with the five?
No, it's breakdowns 2-on-2, 3-on-3, 4-on-4. I mean, those rotations are so vital. So it's never just, you know, working 2-on-2. You've got to know who's tagging the roller, who's getting out on the weak side shooter. It's, you know, sometimes the other post takes the roller, and then, you know, as you're sprinting back after you're coming out of the screening action, you're sprinting and your hands are high and you're trying to get back to the next open player. And so it's taking, you know, it's taking that communication from everybody. So we break it down. Yeah, absolutely. 2-on-2, 3-on-3, 4-on-4 to a 5-on-5 setting, and going over so many different scenarios. Make sure they know what's going to, you know, what could happen and what are we going to do? You know, my players, they don't like to be wrong. And so they want to know every single possible scenario and how they're, you know, how they're going to play it and how we want them to play it. And, you know, sometimes I'm like, just talk, just be a baller. I mean, there's some gray area always. So, you know, if you're playing hard and you're playing together, you know, good things will happen.
I laugh really hard at that. I was not one of them, but I played at Columbia, and our coach used to be like, you guys are too stupid. It's just too smart. You're just too smart. Just go make a play. Just go make it, because we want to ask a million questions. And sometimes you got to talk and just go make a play.
Exactly. I say that a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and on that, sometimes your words can paralyze, as a coach, your words can paralyze a player. So sometimes what they don't know may help them play defensively a little bit. So like just playing hard, like you said, Coach Ruby, playing fast, playing together, playing with communication, you know, you can take care of a lot of problems if you do those few things. So it sometimes it's not the technique, it's how hard your team is playing and how locked in they are defensively and communicating with each other. So I enjoy some gray area. I don't want to paralyze the players with a lot of words and a lot of technique, because sometimes they get lost in that.
We used to have a coach that said, there's no gray area. Just play. Like, just, that's not a thing. He's like, just play. That will cover the gray area. So I love that, Coach Kalamian, about the intensity with which you defend it. Now I am a daughter of a referee, so I hate to go here, but I do think in defending it, part of it is protecting your guys from moving screens, like the whole bit. As coaches, I know you probably don't tell your guys to look for that, but as you're watching on the sideline, how much is that a piece of this equation, or am I making that up?
I mean, when you got your, sometimes when you have your big so far away from the basket, you don't want them getting fouls way out there. You want to save those fouls for the paint, for underneath. So you got to be smart. You got to see how the game is being called. And, you know, you want to, like for us, we want to be aggressive, but aggressive in a smart way without fouling, keeping our hands off. And so that could change the way we are defending. So, you know, the officiating definitely has an effect on games, game to game. And you just got to be ready to, just adjust and just make smart plays.
Yeah, I think there's two things that I like to teach in that scenario when you talk about officiating. One, it's teaching the guard how to draw a foul, because it's really important that when the bigs come up, if he's still moving, you have to draw the foul. And sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself and run into that screen, hoping that there's a whistle. And, you know, it takes you out of the play defensively, but it could also possibly draw the foul on that big guy. And then the next time he's running up there, he does not want to create another foul for himself. So maybe the screen isn't set as well as the time before. So I think we like to teach the guards to run into that screen, sometimes slam into it and try to draw a foul. And then the other thing that we've done a lot in the NBA is we've worked on verticality at the rim with our big guys. And that really means that absorbing the basketball, absorbing the roll, continuing to backpedal. And when you get inside that charge circle, is playing straight up with your hands up and not coming down on the basketball and just playing with verticality and trying to avoid a foul as a big, because that's a big part of the game now, verticality.
No doubt. A great conversation, great insight from both you guys. Before we go, I do want to let folks know about the eCoach resource. eCoach has tons of videos of NBA coaches, workouts, plays, breakdowns. We actually have Luke Walton, Coach Klamian's head coach, going to break down how to defend the pick and roll. We'll come out of that and talk a little bit about this video. Take a look.
This is Luke Walton with NBA Coaches and eCoach. What we're going to talk about now is guarding a ball screen with multiple people. And the most important thing is communication. So that as that ball screen's coming up, when we scout people, we know what way we want to send each ball handler. So for this purpose, we're going to say we want to send you right. So before this point, we already have to know what way we're sending them. If not, we're too late. At this point, when that screen's on, we already have to be up into him. You go hip on hip if you want, eat up all that space, and force him over the top, right? So once you get there, as soon as you get over the top, back to the communication thing, you're yelling at your big, get back, because he's rolling and he can't get back until the ball stopped. So as soon as that ball stopped, you yell at him, who are in here tagging, you see him coming back, you're flying back out, and we're good to go from that point on. So it's about communication, call it early, then return the favor. Once you fight over the top, send him back to his own. Let's go through it live. Good, let's do it again. And again, that's a great job of getting into the ball. A lot of people make mistakes. They hear, send him right. I'm afraid to get up into him because then maybe he'll beat me. You have to trust your teammate. If you say send him right and you keep this space, thinking that's an easier way to do it, now once that screen hits you, he's got all this separation already. So you have to get into the body and force him whatever way that your big man calls you.
Force him right. I'm here.
Perfect. One last time. Let's go. Good. Perfect. So again, in guarding the pick and roll, communication is key. And then if you're on the ball, you got to get up, take away that space so you can fight over the screen. And again, the weak side can't leave until that ball is picked up. So you have to talk in order to stop ball screen.
Great breakdown there from Coach Walton. Again, you can check these things out on eCoach. Tons of different resources, tons of videos for you. Coach Klamian, anything you want to add? And Coach Berube, feel free to follow up. But Coach Klamian, I'll start you. Anything you want to add after watching the video?
Yeah, no, I think the eCoach is a tremendous tool for coaches. And these are just quick hit videos that coaches can look at, and even players, and just kind of get some knowledge on how the NBA does it. But I have to laugh because Luke Walton played on those great Laker championship teams. And normally he was on the weak side of that defense. And the two guys that were in the pick and roll for him defensively were Kobe Bryant and Derek Fisher on the ball and Shaq in the middle of the paint. So I don't think there was a whole lot of things that he had to worry about with those two defensive guys up there playing alongside of him. But I think that what Luke pointed out there was perfect, talking about getting into the ball, taking away space, impacting the basketball, working as a guard to get over the screen. Really good stuff. And again, that little concept that you saw there, like Coach Ruby said earlier, we drill that little concept 2-on-2, 3-on-3, 4-on-4, just kind of build out starting with what that looked like there with what Luke did in that video. And just great defensive work for teams and individuals if you want to get better.
Carla, anything you want to add?
Yeah, I mean, all of that was great. Things that we already, talked about, when that ball handler comes, downhill like that, do not leave until you know that the guard is back. That weak side player, like, stay tagged until that post is back to theirs. And it's just, the number one thing was communication. And I think we've talked about that a lot today. And if you have your team on the same page, you're in a good space.
thank you guys for your time. I think with pick and roll defense, easier said than done, because we can tell you all day long, you can understand the drills, but sometimes it's just the hardest thing to do right now in modern basketball is defend the pick and roll as a team. But you guys gave great insight and great analysis. Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having us on.
We want to thank our friends at NBA Coaches Association and eCoach for providing instructional content from their eCoach video library to give our listeners an insider's perspective on how NBA coaches teach the game. For more information and to access the library of more than 400 videos, go to eCoachBasketball.com.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to join Monica and Dallin each week on the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. For more, go to JuniorNBA.com or wherever your favorite podcasts are found.